We did in the Rambam, we're in the 12th chapter of Hilchos Malveh Lehovah, Halacha Gimel. We're discussing when inheritors have to pay off debts that their father left behind. And we discussed in the last couple halachas that we only collect from adults, but not from children, because we have to wait till they get older, because they could find possible receipts that their father had paid off debts, or etc., etc. So although we normally wait and do not take money from minor inheritors, there are situations in Halacha Gimel where we collect from the children because immediately, and don't wait till they grow up to be adults, because it is for their benefit for us to collect now. Usually it's not, because they don't know what's going on. But sometimes, even though they don't know what's going on, it's still for our the benefit for us to help, as you'll see in the next two cases. Hoysa malva ribis shel goyim. So let's say the father borrowed money from a non-Jew, and the non-Jew's terms were they'd have to pay interest. And if you're allowed to pay interest to a goy, he's not Jewish, there's no problem with that. So the father's paying, has an interest-bearing loan that the goy gave him. Father now dies, and if we're going to tell the goy, and they agreed, the goy accepted that whatever the Jewish law will be, vis-a-vis whatever details, it's okay. Now, Jewish law allows them to collect interest, so that's fine. The Jewish law says that we cannot collect, or can't collect any money from the inheritors. We have to wait till the children grow up. The non-Jew's very happy with that too, because the interest will just keep accruing for the next 8 years, whatever, and he's going to get a lot of money later on. Now, is this in the best interest of the children to have interest keep piling up like this? Most likely not. So therefore, we say if there was an outstanding debt that the deceased father had with the non-Jews, this interest now is eating up the possessions that they have inherited from their father. So what do we do to alleviate that? Ma'midim lahem apetropos. We appoint a court agent, and he has to be involved with their property that they inherited, umochrim, and they sell whatever properties are necessary, uparin achov, and they pay off the debt. Even though perhaps maybe the children could have had some kind of a document that showed that the father paid off the debt. If it was a Jew who would be asking to get paid, we would not allow the Jew to get paid. Number one, there'd be no interest bearing on it, A. And B, maybe the children are older, they may find a document that said that the father paid back. And that's what we normally would not collect. But since with the interest is accruing, and it's not, you know, they may not find any document that showed the debt was paid, and then the children will lose a lot of money, so it's in their best interest for us to pay off the debt now. Yes, sir. So we will see in Halacha Dalet that there's sometimes it's not in our interest to pay it. Clearly, it's in their interest. I understand what you're saying. If it's only 1% interest and the kids have their money on a 5% interest-bearing account, so they're making money not paying it off, obviously we wouldn't do it. The case is obvious where the interest that they have to pay the goy is detrimental to them. And obviously the court would have to make that decision. If it's only a 1% interest-bearing loan and the children have other investments that are getting a lot more, then it's not for the benefit to pay it off. But well, whatever, the apotropos, obviously. The court will see what's going on over there. The goy is going to say it's a 1% loan. And the court already sees what the children are inheriting, then they're going to obviously know what to do. Okay, let's look at the second case. Now, the second case where we would pay for the children as quickly as possible. But first, we have to understand one important thing. If a man, a woman that she's married to a man is entitled to a ksuva if either the man dies and she becomes a widow or the man divorces her. However, there are certain differences in terms of until the ksuva is given. For a widow, for example, once the ksuva is paid out, we're finished. We have nothing more to deal with her. But until the ksuva is paid out, the woman is entitled to take money for food that she needs. And as long as the ksuva is not paid out, she can keep asking money every day. I need money for food. I need money for food. Once you pay it out, then you don't have to give her food anymore, because the ksuva is meant to take care of the food. Which is not the case when you divorce a woman. You divorce a woman, you got rid of her, finished. We'll just wait till you get the ksuva, and she doesn't get any food until then. However, we'll see there's other issues involved as well. So let's say, v'chein isha shetava ksuvasa. Let's say the woman wants to get her ksuva. Bein almana bein grusha, regardless if the woman is widowed or she's divorced. So we can stand the one and say, well, maybe we'll wait till the kids grow up. This is no different than any other creditor. So let's say, let's wait till she grows up and she'll get her ksuva later. The question is it in the best interest for the children for this not to get paid off, or are there other factors that would tell us that perhaps we should pay it out sooner? So we say like this, in either situation where there's different factors weighing in over here, still, ma'amidim lehem apetropis, you appoint a guardian over their assets, v'niskakim, and they still do sell the ksuva, sell property to pay out the ksuva. And we'll see there's two reasons why we're going to do this, and one reason will apply to both a divorced woman and a widow, and one reason will apply only to a widow. The reason applies to both is Mishum Chein Ha'isha. It's called the Chein Ha'isha, the grace of the woman. What does that mean? Well, the woman is either widowed or divorced. Now, she would like to be able to remarry. She can remarry technically because either she's a widow or she has a bill of divorce. She may remarry. The question is, what kind of dowry does she have? She has absolutely nothing. Now, when would she have a dowry if she collects her ksuva? So if we're going to tell the woman, you know, the children are 5 years old, we'll wait another 8 years, and then you'll have some money. Well, good luck, lady, trying to find a shidduch in the next 8 years. So it's not really fair to the woman to have to wait 8 years to collect her ksuva. So now, even though, you know, there could have been other documents that maybe she got her ksuva paid out in her lifetime, whatever, we're not going to know that for sure, and we would want to wait 8 years, but this is a much stronger consideration. We don't want the woman to have to go around idly not being able to get a shidduch because she doesn't have any money. However, let's say the woman did the following. So before we paid out the ksuva, lefikach, therefore, im kofza ha'isha, if the woman jumps, as it were, she's quick on the trigger, Vinices, and she marries somebody right away afterwards. So that reason of finding charm to get a shidduch no longer applies. Similarly, even if she was a widow and paying out, now there'd be another consideration, you know, needs a lot of food, and this would not necessarily be good for the children, but still, v'acher bali tfo ksuvasem nixam. Now she wants to get the ksuva. She wants to get the ksuva now. So now what reason would we have to give her the ksuva? If you want to say so she can find a shidduch, she's married. If you want to say it so she'll have food to eat, she's married to a guy who's got to give her food to eat.
No,
so
she promised her originally.
Oh, that's fine. But the children are minors. There's another factor here. In other words, we're trying to balance different things. Of course, we have to be compassionate on a woman who has lost her husband or she's divorced. We can't allow her to just be out in the street like that without a means of taking care of herself, without a means of finding a shidduch for herself. That is an important factor. And if that was a factor, that was a viable factor, that would trump our protection of the minors to wait till they are adults. But once the woman is, so to speak, taken care of, she didn't wait around. She went and got herself married. Doesn't mean to say she will not get her ksuva at a later date, but there's no pressing need for her to get the ksuva now. And then it could be 8 years from now, if we wait till the children are adults, they may be able to prove that she's not entitled to the ksuva. So therefore we say like this. So once she's married and she wants to collect her ksuva, ain't niskakinlaw. We don't deal with her ad sheyigdulu hayasamim until the orphans grow up. Share ain lamazonos. There's no obligation for them to pay out the food for her. If she's divorced, you don't have it at all. And the married one, once she got herself married, there's no obligation. Vahare nises, and also she is married, and once she's married, all these issues have been taken care of. So as long as she's not married, then we would sell the ksuva immediately. But if she's already married, there's no need to have to sell the ksuva for her. That's not, they're only when they have to pay the sustenance. Yeah. That's the secondary reason. It only in the case if she's an almana. If she's a widow, they'd have to pay the sustenance. That would be a reason as well to keep paying her. Either way, we're paying out the ksuva immediately for the chayim that she wants. And on top of that's right, for the widowed woman, there's the sustenance they have to pay. But once she's married, those reasons fall off. Okay, we continue the Rambam. Halacha Dalid. Although we just gave you two examples where we would collect early for the benefit of the children, sometimes it's not, even though you think it's a benefit to collect for them, but it's not a benefit to collect to them. Horu miksas ha-ga'onim, son of the ga'onim, have ruled as follows. Shimhoyu ha-nechosim keneged ha-ksuva bilvad obchusim imenu. So let's assume that the inheritance that they have is equal or less than the value of the ksuva that has to be paid out to his wife. Now, then we don't pay the ksuva out. So let's go back a step. If let's say what they inherited for the sake of argument was $10,000, okay, and the ksuva is $1,000, okay, and it pay, and if they don't pay the ksuva out, she's going to be eating hundreds of dollars every year, okay, over a course of many, of let's say 8 years. So she's going, you're going to pay up $5,000 till we're going to pay out her ksuva. That eats up a lot of what they could have.
So we could gauge her diet.
So whatever, I'm just saying, right? So then it makes sense to pay her out because what she's eating is going to slowly or rapidly eat up the ksuva. But if paying her out means they've lost all what they have, if you pay her out, they're paying her out the ksuva, that's it. There's nothing left for the kids, or even there's more to the ksuva than what's there. So you think you're helping them. It only helps if there's still something left that they could have that she's eating up and taking away. But if paying out the ksuva means, and now the kids have zero, then they're obviously not helping them. So then, ein niskakana, then we don't have to bring in an apotropos and get involved in selling it right away. There's no benefit to the orphans by paying out now, because then they'll have nothing left. Okay, so what do we say? Don't pay it off, and slowly, you have to feed her, but at least maybe a year or two before she eats up whatever's left. It's the lesser of two evil situations. We're not dealing with a lot of money to begin with. Because we didn't say, we didn't say we have to go and bother to deal with selling off the inheritance of the Yisomim to pay off the ksuva, so we should not reduce their what the children inherit because of supplying food for the mother. However, Vizos, but this woman, Hol Vahino, tells her call, she's going to take everything that we pay her off the ksuva, maskus, yeshu, summon, what merit, what benefit is there for the orphans, haketanim, bedavar, said with this, she's come that we have to bother with them, and you're going to say, but wait a minute, but if the woman doesn't get the money, she's not going to have the chain, she won't have the charm, she won't be able to find the shidduch. Okay, well, guess what? Again, we are prioritizing over here. And therefore, we're not concerned about the favor that the woman will have in other people's eyes because feeding Yisomim will take precedence. So again, we take a look at every situation here. If we can pay her out and there's still money left for the Yisomim, then we worry about her chayin. But if we pay her out and there'll be nothing left for the Yisomim, well, feeding Yisomim takes a priority over having the woman get remarried, even though she is eating some of the Yisomim. So eventually you're going to lose everything anyway. So you're trying to do as best as you can with a bad situation. Yeah.
Do you have other responsibilities, like redeeming her if she's kidnapped and all that stuff?
I don't know.
Is there nothing in the Kasuba that says when it has to be paid out? Like,
that doesn't write conditions on that. Regular ksuva doesn't have these kinds
of
conditions.
Doesn't she have
They're minors. She has a law of a creditor. She has a law of a first creditor, but she can't be better than a creditor, and creditors cannot collect from Yisomim.
She could go after if they had sold something.
But they haven't sold anything. She cannot, we said, you cannot collect from Yisomim who are minors. That's what we started off last.
Unless it's their benefit. Can you promise a kasuba and you don't have the land to back it up?
It's nothing to do with the land. We don't pay out the ksuva if the kids are minors. Finish.
But you're saying there's a situation where they don't even have to pay it. So that means they promised a ksuba and there was no land back.
A guy promised, a guy can write whatever he wants. If he doesn't have anything, he doesn't have anything. What are you going to do?
I think Sab is asking.
Is this the first time you ever heard a person who makes a commitment and can't honor a commitment?
But he wants to know, isn't there usually karka?
There's nothing. What karka is there? If he has it, then the kids have it.
Okay.
If there is land, the kids have it.
Right.
And we would delay paying it out, right?
Okay.
Unless it would eat up too much. We pay it out. Obviously, there isn't a lot over here. If we paid a ksuva, everything's taken away.
Okay.
Yeah.
This kind of
puts the creditor or the mother at odds with the children. And I would have thought in 99% of the cases, the mother wants to stay with the kids.
First of all, I know they're her kids. Pardon? How do you know they're her kids?
Yeah. I'm assuming.
Why would you assume? You never heard of a second marriage?
Okay.
So not all, there's a reason why the Cinderella story exists, right?
But in most cases, how often...
I'm just saying, there's a Cinderella story where, the mother, the second mother does not like the other kid.
But that's not the common situation.
First of all, we're not talking about common, we're not talking about anything, we're talking about law. Okay? Law has to cut through, there's a Torah hierarchy of who we take care of, notwithstanding anyone, if they want to, can be moichel. Obviously, if the mother loves her children, she'll want to take care of her children. Not every mother is mandated by Jewish law to love her children and to take present over her children. It's not her responsibility to feed and take care of her children. Not all situations, if we could work things out, we wouldn't be going to a court, would we?
Obviously, she has a responsibility to look after her children?
No. Where does it say anywhere she has a responsibility to take care of her children? Where does it say anywhere it's her responsibility?
So does the community have a responsibility?
That's another story. Now we want to say, okay, who has to go get charity? Well, when you run out of money, then the community has a different responsibility, that someone has to be a ward of the state or has to be taking charity from the state. That now a new mitzvah kicks in. We're never going to let ever a Jew starve to death, but the difference is, can you just go to the bank and take money out of the bank, or do you got to go to the gemach and humbly ask the people in the gemach to give you charity? That's the difference. So we have to go with the hierarchy. Jewish law cannot be influenced by emotions. And once you're taking this to court, obviously you're taking this to court. If the mother, if it was her children, and she cared about her children, she would make sure the children had first. Okay, if you're taking this to court already, that means everyone is caring about their needs first, and we have to have a law that gives us a hierarchy as to who we are halachically responsible first to. Okay, hey, Tziva Hamorisha Va'omer Tino Mona Leploni. Okay, let's say the father, before he dies, he leaves in his will that he wants certain people paid off for whatever reasons, if he had a debt or whatever it was. So before he died, the father willed that you should give so-and-so a mona. Okay, now, the question is, the word a mona, there's two different types of monas that existed in the days of the Talmud. One was called a mona tsuri, that was made up of 100 zuz. There was another one called a mona medina, was called a mona medina, which was an eighth of that. It was only worth 12 and a half zuz. Wow. So it was one eighth of the value. So when the father wasn't clear and he says, listen, pay this guy off a mona, obviously everybody knows about this. The fellow who it was promised to obviously is going to want the more expensive mona. The children don't know what a mona is even, or doesn't have much understanding of its value. So now we have to be worried about the interests of these young children. So if he said that, niskoking acher shemayim l'avatropis, we can deal with it after we appoint an apotropis. Yes. We appoint the agent to take care of the kids. And he litom tanosim to litigate for them. And therefore, because there's what to discuss. And these children are now, clearly the father has to give a mona. There's nothing to discuss. There's no, documents hidden that we have to bring out later. It is clear this fellow is owed a mona. But now we need someone to litigate for the children who aren't capable of litigating, so we give an apotropos. But it has to be dealt with. We don't wait till they grow up. It has to be dealt with immediately. And since there's a lack of clarity, the apotropos will provide a benefit for the children. However, Amar, if the father said before he died, to know mona zeh, he was specific what kind of mona it was, leploni. Or for that matter, he didn't say it in the first case, but the same thing, osada zu leploni, or this particular field. In other words, from the second half over, the same thing could happen in the first half, if the father should just give the fellow a field, but didn't say what kind of field, would bring in a trumpus as well. But here he was very clear. This type of mana, either the 100 zuz mana or the 12 and a half zuz mana, or this specific field that he's talking about, then nice, and we just give it to the guy. You don't have to appoint any type of apotropos because the apotropos has nothing to talk about. It's just clear that Bezdin will say, just hand over what is supposed to be given to them. Remember, Trumpus is entitled to get a little bit of money too. He's an executor.
He's a trustee.
So why are we gonna take money from the kids for the executor to deal with that? That's other unnecessary expenses that can be taken care of otherwise. Halachavav. Now it gets a little trickier here. So now the question is, let's say there's some land that the children have, and they've seemed to inherit it, but there seems to be debate amongst the actual ownership of the land, and that will be the next couple halachas. Nimtzes karka she'ena shelohem. Okay, let's say there is now some argument as to whether certain land belongs to them or not. Okay, right now, you know, the father had it. They seemed to have inherited. Now there seems to be a discussion, claims that perhaps it wasn't theirs to inherit to begin with. Maybe the father had stolen it, and Peter says it's not their land to inherit. Now, if the father was alive, they can go to the father, and they could have made the claim, and the father can litigate with them. Could be these are unscrupulous people who are waiting for the father to die, so there's no one to litigate against them. Or maybe it's just something that happened just recently. But anyway, they are not happy. They think the land is theirs, and the father had stolen it. They say, you know, your father had stolen the land from us. So now they would need, the children would have to defend themselves on this. And they're not able to defend themselves. And the guy doesn't have to wait until they grow up for this. So we appoint an apotropos to litigate for them and for us to be able to judge with the person's arguing to find out if it was stolen or not. That's what they'll have to deal with. And if Taka im nimtzes gezula, if we Taka find out, let's say the fellow brings witnesses that shows that it was his, right? So in such a case, you don't even need an apotropos again, because once you have witnesses of something like that, it's no worse than having a document itself that says he owes it to them. And machzir nosel v'alel, you have to give it back to the owner. Now, it's interesting, as we now are in the middle of halacha, the Rambam shifts gears. And we're not speaking about a case now of inheritance anymore. And now we're just picking another case now. V'chein katan, we're giving other examples where we don't wait. V'chein katan shetokav ba'avodov. Let's say a katan, a minor, comes along, and he gets one of his servants. Let's say the father died, the kid's a young kid, and he's got some servants that he has. And now this young juvenile delinquent who's under bar mitzvah takes his Canaanite slave, for example. He goes through the power of the Canaanite slave and takes over another guy's field that really he shouldn't be doing over here. So you might think, oh, well, you know, the kid can't defend himself. You got to wait, etc. No. Ain omrim, we do not say, let's wait till the kid grows up. Because
no.
Maybe he has witnesses that it was his father's field and he's too young to find the witnesses. No. Elamotzino, so miyoto, we take the field out of his hands. Ulikishiyako, when he grows up, im yeshlo eidim yova eidov, then let him bring witnesses to prove that it is his, and he could bring it. But if we're not talking about a case where the father left it for him and these things, the kid's just acting on his own, we don't allow him to do this. A similar type. Now we go back to inheritance. Halacha Zayin. Karka Shaoyisa Becheskas Ketan. Let's say that there's a piece of land that we assume belongs to the kids. It was known that the father had this. No one is claiming it was stolen. The father died. The kids inherited the land. Uba Acher, and then another fellow comes along. Vetan Shehila Kucha, and he claims that he had bought it from the father, Mimarishim, from their father. The Yeshlo Adim, and he has witnesses, Shehechsikba, that he lived on the property, Va'ochla Shnei Chazaka, and he was there for 3 years in order to make a Chazaka. He had, let's say, the father died in 2014, and the guy has proof that he says, I bought it from your father, I have witnesses that I was in the property from 2010 to 2013 for 3 years, and your father didn't say anything. And now the guy would like to take it. So no, ein motzi en osa miyadam, we can't take it out of their hands, ad shagdilu, until they grow up. She makablim eidim shalobifnei baldin. We don't take eidim in front of the litigant. There's different things over here. A shtar is one thing, but if you have eidim, we don't accept a testimony of Edim if they're testifying not in front of the litigant that they're taking it away from. V'hakotan and the young children, a little child is cannot counterclaim. So even if the Edim are going to testify against the 6-year-old, it's not smart enough. And it's like, there's a certain chutzpah to lie in front of somebody, but no one feels a lot of chutzpah lying in front of an 8-year-old. So therefore, there's no one to counterclaim the witnesses. Avolim holds a shtar, but if he brings a shtar, that he bought it, Hareza Mekayim is a shtar. All you have to do is validate the shtar. We have to prove that the shtar was a proper shtar, you take it away from them, after they have an apotropos for them to make sure that at least everything is valid, that he can at least complain that it should be validated. Okay, now, what if they come to the point now where we have to sell their property? Let's say it is a situation where we do sell their property, because for whatever the reasons we've given, there's a number of scenarios where we say they have to pay off debts and we sell property. So now that we sell the property, there is a formal procedure that has to be followed. And that's going to be the next few halachas. We'll be dealing with these procedures. When we are now brought to the situation in Bezin that we must sell the property of the orphans, so what do we do? Number one, shomin esakarka. We have to evaluate what the land is worth. Then there's public announcements made. Shloshim yom ritzufim. Either 30 straight days, day after day, announcements are made. Oh, shishim yom, or within a 60-day period, sheni v'chamishi every Monday and Thursday when there's a lot of people in town on market days. So it's either 62 months of Mondays and Thursdays, which will come out to about 18 announced days of Mondays and Thursdays in a 60-day period, or 30 straight days announced every day, obviously except on Shabbos, I imagine. Umachrizim baboka of Erevam, the announcements are made in the morning and the night. Why then? Bishas achnosus poalim, when the workers come in. Ubishas atzos, when the workers go out. V'chom misha rotz aliknos, anybody who wants to buy this, Yolich ha-poam levakerlo. You send the workers to check out the field to see what they think, if it's worth it for them. Now, ubishoshim achrizin, and when they do make the announcements, there's some details to the announcements. Misaimim esasor bimzareh. They go and measure, and they inform what the boundaries of the land is. We just don't say a piece of land. We say it's 40 by 80 from here to there, etc., etc. Umodim kamayova, they say how much they feel it's worth. Meaning, say how much fruits does it give every year? What's the yield, the yearly yield in terms of that? Ubakama hishuma, and what would the Bezdin say? We feel based on the market values of properties that have been sold in the last 30 days, this should be a proper price for this. Now, and one last important fact, you fear that's all you gotta say, but notice one more thing. Umipne ma rotzim lemocha, and why they feel they need to sell it. They're wondering, what does it matter why they need to sell it? Let's just let the guy buy it. He gives you some of the money to deal with it. The answer is, maybe you can kill two birds with one stone. Remember, the reason why the Yisorma sell it, because there is a creditor who needs it. And certainly if you give them the money, they'll have the money to pay the creditor. But it could be the creditor may be satisfied with something less. And you could have the potential buyer go straight to the creditor, pay off the creditor, and just take the land instead. Maybe the creditor would prefer to have the land, and he will directly pay off. I'm sorry, again, perhaps the buyer would prefer to have the land, would prefer to take the land, but pay the creditor instead of paying the orphans, because he could get a better deal by paying the creditors, and the creditors will be happy as well. And therefore, they could end up spending less, making the creditor happy, and the buyer will spend less. The children don't lose at all. The children just have to get this person off their back. So they could just say, listen, you go buy, we'll sell the field, we have the money, and then we give them the money. Or the guy could say, listen, sell, give me, I'll take the field, and I'll pay the creditor directly. And I'll be able to deal with the creditor in a way that I'll end up paying less. The creditor will be happy, the orphans are happy, and that's fine. We'll be examples of that. So we have to say, for example, so what do we, and they have to say, well, why do we need to sell the field? They say, im lahagvos labal chov, if it's to pay back a creditor, oh, l'ksuva isho, we have to say it's to pay off the ksuva. Because sometimes, Sometimes a person would rather, the buyer would rather take the field, and instead of giving the money to the kids, would rather give the money to the creditors. It would work out better for them. And some would rather pay off to the woman. So it could sometimes work out better for them. For example, it could be the woman is willing to take money incrementally. She doesn't actually need to get it paid off. When the kids are going to pay off, they're just going to pay her off the whole ksuba. The guy said, listen, ma'am, you don't need all that money right now. Wouldn't you be happy if I give you a guaranteed every month, an annuity or something that just keeps going on? The kids are off the hook. They're fine. This guy, the guy has time to play around with money and do this and that and other things. Or, and there's other people, certain balchovs are willing to take different types of money, doesn't care about the type of money they get. It could be certain money that's, the coins are a little chipped or whatever, and he can just get rid of those coins. He doesn't have to give regular top.
So he can handle with them.
He can handle. Now, of course, the creditor can just say, listen, this is all I want. I don't want anything less. And that's how it has to be done. And he could stand his ground. And the guy didn't gain anything by just, taking the land and promising to pay off. But at least let him know why the kids have to pay it off. So if they would want to take the children off the hook and pay the creditors directly, they'd be able to do that.